it was so, and so is, really hard thinking about that delivery experience and how it so wasn't what was envisioned.
No.
Or what was anticipated. And I think for me, it does make me, I guess, disappointed is probably the best word. Like, it's not really like sadness, mm-hmm. but I think like disappointed thinking that my her first moments in this world were with me pass out cold on an operating table, and then my husband waiting outside of the room, and that neither of us were like physically or mentally there.
Yeah.
Welcome to the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and to talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger and photographer by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. So, new mamas, let's do it. Let's kick off the episode and get to the good stuff. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the New Mamas Podcast. Today I am speaking with my longtime friend, Meredith Malloy. Meredith and I met through a mutual friend and we are still in contact today. She just gave birth. She's 3 weeks fresh out the gate. And I'm so excited to talk to her because one of the things she mentioned was her birth didn't go as expected. And I feel like that's so true for so many of us. And I'm just really looking forward to hearing her story. She is a working mom. And we're also going to dive into a little bit of the topic of what defines us, right? For the last decade and 2 years, we were talking about this before recording, our work has defined us. And now that we became mothers, suddenly everything's changed. So, Meredith, I'm so excited to talk to you today. Did you want to give a quick intro, or do you want to dive right into your birth story?
I would say let's dive right in. I think you covered it super well, being a brand new working mom, emphasis on the brand new.
Yeah.
And really getting acclimated to being a mom and keeping this little baby alive every day.
Let's talk about your birth story, and then I want to talk about how you were feeling before your birth. So we'll kind of do things a little bit backwards.
So my birth story, I think my pregnancy, even backing up before labor and delivery, definitely had a few speed bumps along the way. Yeah, it was, I think rocky sounds like dramatic, but it was at the point where every other week or every month, it was feeling like there was something else, some sort of hiccup happening. Yeah, so early on, around 6 weeks, I started bleeding, which every pregnant woman, seems the worst.
Yeah.
When that happens at that time, and even like before you have your first, you know, appointment, your first prenatal appointment with your OB. And so it happened in the middle of the night, of course. So it's like the most chaotic time that it could have happened. And I went in for an appointment the next day, had an ultrasound done. Baby was fine, but was diagnosed with a subchorionic hematoma, which essentially bleed within the sac. And so on my ultrasound, you could actually see it. It was like a shadow of like the outline of the sac where my now baby Penelope was in that caused bleeding, and it caused bleeding for a little while throughout my first trimester, I was, you know, put on pelvic rest for that whole time, had to really take it easy. And obviously with that came a lot of worry and anxiety. And so sort of fresh out the gate, it was like, oh my gosh, this isn't exactly going according to plan. And then later on in a subsequent ultrasound, once the hematoma resolved itself, which was great, there was a bit of a placenta abnormality that was found on a subsequent ultrasound.
Oh my goodness.
That required just some additional monitoring and didn't cause complications to my daughter, but it was mentioned that it could cause complications at labor and delivery.
Okay.
And so it was sort of like, you know, what, 4-5 months from then, it was like this lingering worry where it's like, oh my gosh, what, like, could this lead to hemorrhaging? Mm-hmm. Could this really complicate labor and delivery? And having that worry was definitely anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, then all of a sudden came, I know, all of this, I had some irregular, erratic blood pressure hiccups that happened. And it wasn't enough where during pregnancy, it was preeclampsia, but it did end up leading to post-delivery about a week and a half ago. A couple days after delivering, I was diagnosed with postpartum preeclampsia and had to be readmitted back into the hospital. And so myself, my husband, and my newborn, at that point, less than a week old, we were readmitted into the hospital.
Oh my gosh, and Meredith.
And so a lot of this stemmed from, I think, the blood pressure, the erratic blood pressure that I had throughout the pregnancy, and then delivering really triggered it, you know, coming on head on.
Did you have any symptoms of, like, how did you know that you had postpartum preeclampsia?
Yeah, so because I had the erratic, irregular blood pressure throughout my pregnancy, they had me buy an at-home blood pressure monitor.
Got it.
But when I got discharged from the hospital after delivering, it was sort of with the stipulation of, hey, this is actually more common than women think of. And you can go home, but be monitoring your blood pressure, be checking it a couple times a day. And then also, since it's been irregular for you, like, we're letting you go home on a Friday, we're scheduling you to go in to get it checked at the OB's office on Monday to make sure that's not rearing its ugly head. And then lo and behold, over the weekend, it was sort of borderline where it wasn't quite at the point where they were like, you need to call. But going in on that Monday, they were like, yeah, we got to figure out what's going on. And then from there, it just continued to get higher and higher. So, yeah.
What? So then what does treatment look like for that?
Yeah. So I was lucky that I did not have other symptoms, because other symptoms can be if you deliver and you go home and if you start having vision issues, if everything starts to blurry, if you start having headaches, really, if you just start feeling like off, they're like, you need to call, like, right away sort of thing. And so I didn't have any other symptoms. But for treatment, if you get readmitted, one of the biggest concerns around postpartum preeclampsia is the risk of seizures. And so they have you go in, you get readmitted, they hook you up with another lovely IV, as if as a new mom, you haven't, like, just gotten an IV taken out of you, for the whole labor and delivery process. And they have you go on a 24-hour drip of a potassium sulfate, like, liquid that essentially it's an anti-seizure.
Yep.
That's the one. which also makes you feel really woozy and sort of like you're on a different planet, which like as a brand new mom and postpartum, you sort of feel like you're on a different planet anyways. So it sort of exacerbates that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they put me on a couple blood pressure medications, which they've kept me on since I've gotten home. Just today, I graduated off of one of them. My blood pressure is starting to normalize. But it can be up to, you know, really the full like 6 to 8+ weeks postpartum that this can linger. So I'm on the road to recovery, but it definitely was like a 1-2 punch where, you know, my labor and delivery itself definitely didn't go according to plan. And then this, my pregnancy didn't totally go according to plan. And then immediate postpartum did not go according to plan. And Lena, you know me, like I'm a planner.
Yes.
Like I like knowing what is up. And so this has definitely been a test of some of my own flexibility.
I think we share that. I think we share that trait. We are both planners. I feel for you, girl. Dealing with health issues in the newborn stage, like the newborn stage is hard enough. Dealing with health issues is a whole other thing. I don't know if you remember, I had that crazy, crazy allergic reaction right after, which lasted 6 to 8 weeks, which is feels like a lifetime when you have a newborn. It's awful. So I feel for you. I'm happy that you're starting to level out and feel better.
Yeah, thank you. I'm thankful too. And I think the one silver lining when I look at it in a positive light is that my focus, as soon as I had to get readmitted and my focus went to all of the preeclampsia blood pressure stuff, a lot of the hiccups that happened with labor and delivery, which included, you know, like an unplanned C-section and an epidural that didn't work. And so I had to be put under general anesthesia for the unplanned C-section.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so a lot, I think some of it was almost like, okay, well now my focus is just on getting better. Mm-hmm. Blood pressure stuff that's going on, where at least I'm not necessarily totally fixated on how my whole delivery went completely awry, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk a little bit about your delivery then? Was she early? Did she come on time?
She was full term, but technically a bit early. My water broke at home.
Okay.
Which was fun.
That's good. I mean, you didn't have to get, at least you didn't also have to get induced.
Right. But we were 38 weeks and 2 days when my water broke, almost 3 days. And I don't know if your water broke at home or not. No.
I had to get induced and it was a sad experience.
It's nothing like what happens in the movies. It is nothing like that Sex in the City episode where like Miranda's water breaks on Carrie's shoes. Like it is nothing like that in real life. My water broke and I, honest to God, I was not sure if I had just like peed myself.
It
wasn't super dramatic, but it was just like I stood up and I was just like, oh, I peed my pants, which like at the end of pregnancy it's like, oh, like maybe I just peed my pants.
Yeah, which is like an everyday occurrence. Yeah.
So my water broke at home. I googled, and Google told me this trick of, if you're not sure if your water broke or if you peed yourself, to lay down on your side for a half an hour and then stand up. And if more water or liquid comes out, then it's likely that your water broke and you didn't pee yourself.
And you did that. So
that's what I did. And I stood up and more liquid came out. So I was like, we should call the doctor. So I went in. It took two tests to confirm that it was indeed my water that broke. And then they were like, guess you're going to have a baby. So,
oh my God.
So we'll admit you.
Did they stick their hands up your... Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Can we talk quickly? Nobody talks about how uncomfortable...
So uncomfortable.
Oh my God. And it felt like she stuck her whole hand in there.
The whole hand. And it's not, it's also, it varies from person to person that's doing it. Oh. Probably based on hand size. Right.
Oh. Right.
It is so uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. Nobody talks about that.
No one talks about it. And you definitely, in that moment, like, you're not anticipating having a hand.
No. I remember, like, my first reaction was, like, what the fuck? Like, there was no other reaction other than I was, like, what was that? And I remember thinking, if I can't deal with her hand up there, how am I supposed to have a baby come out of there?
And then my biggest reaction was when she put her hand in there and mentioned, she was like, oh, so I can feel your baby's head.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, her head is that? I'm like, where is my baby's head? Her head is literally right there.
You're like, what?
So, and she was like, yeah, so like her head's right there. Like, I can feel her head. And I'm like, you felt her head with your hand. Like that, like she's that, it totally blew my mind.
Okay, so I'm curious, if she could feel her head, then yeah. Why, what happened that you needed a C-section?
Happen? Yeah, so nothing from there. I was very much not dilated when my water broke.
Oh no.
My water broke and I was, I think, like, not even 2 centimeters dilated.
That's the worst.
Yeah. And I think that they were hoping that things would progress naturally overnight. So my water broke at like 10:30 at night.
Uh-huh.
So by the time I got admitted, it was after midnight, and it was sort of like, let's see what happens overnight. And then nothing really happened overnight. And so they started me on Pitocin the morning. Which I was like, okay, cool. Like, I've watched tons of episodes of 16 and Pregnant. Like, they can get put on Pitocin. Like, sure, it's like a drug that jumpstarts labor. Awesome. Like, that's what they say in every episode.
Yeah.
And so they started me on that, and nothing really happened, I would say, until mid-afternoonish, when contractions finally started, which felt, I definitely did not anticipate what contractions would feel like, but I definitely felt them.
Yeah, I know. I like, so Meredith, 10 months out the gate, you like literally black out and you don't remember. It's the weirdest thing.
I remember like looking at my husband just being like, what is happening? Like, what is happening? And the hospital that I gave birth in, they offer nitrous oxide for like, as pain management.
Yeah.
For like their mild to moderate pain.
I had that too. Did you take it?
Oh yeah. I had them wheel it in. Like, before I pulled the trigger on the epidural, I had them bring it in, and I was like, let's gas me up. Let's give this a try.
Yeah.
It took the edge off. And but very shortly thereafter, I was like, time to go with the epidural. The epidural, it took 2 attempts to get it in, which was a lovely pain in and of itself.
Oh, no.
And then it was I thought it was really odd because even though I've never had an epidural before, as the night kind of came and went on and my contractions were getting stronger, I started to like have pain that was back on a level 7 out of 10.
It was like a lot.
Sort of pain. And it wasn't sharp pain. It was like this like blunt sort of pain. I'm like, this is not how I thought things would feel with an epidural. And then at the same time, you know, my OB was coming in every hour, couple of hours to do the cervical check. And I was continuing to dilate, but not dilate nearly as quickly as people were hoping. And so along with like the blunt pain, and at this point, like me crying with like every contraction that was coming, it must have been, it was well into the night where my dilation just sort of started to stall, like in between like 6 to 7 centimeters. And at the same time, I started to spike a fever.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And my blood pressure started to get high and then got low and then it got high.
Okay.
And at that point, it had been well over 24 hours since my water broke. And when your water breaks, it starts the chance of infection for both mom and baby really starts to heighten after that 24 hour point. And so with me starting to spike a fever and my blood pressure starting to get out of whack, there definitely started to be a concern about the kind of distress that my baby might be getting into in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we made, so the doctors and we made the judgment call early the next morning around 4 a.m. to go ahead with a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
I had sort of mentally prepared myself, like knowing that like unplanned C-sections can happen.
Yeah.
It wasn't a total like in the dark, like this is totally like unexpected sort of thing. I had like mentally gone into labor and delivery thinking like this happens and like this could happen. And so I was comfortable with that. What I totally wasn't anticipating was once being in the operating room and all of like the prep work and like an operating room, it's just such a super cold and sterile like environment with like the fluorescent lights. And then there's like a whole army of people there that are like prepping you and starting to think like, okay, I'm like about to just like be cut open. Like this is cool, I guess. They were testing how my epidural was doing by doing this like little pinprick test with like the end of a paperclip, essentially, to make sure that I couldn't feel it. And it turned out that there was a window of skin which was right where an incision would have to be made, which is also right where I felt all of the blunt pain during all of those contractions I was having, where I could feel like all of the little pinprick tests that they were trying to do. And it was just a window of skin that the epidural did not take to at all.
It's like super skin. It's like,
yep, super skin, anti-epidural skin, apparently. And in that moment, it was just like, okay, like we need to put you under, like we need to put you like to sleep. We need to put you under. We need to get your baby out. Like we need to like get your baby out now. Like sort of thing.
Oh my goodness.
And it was very like for me in that moment, it was like not even being able to fully process it. Like I started kind of freaking out a little bit. And I remember I started to cry because I was like, what? Like, what is happening? And then next thing I knew, I was asleep.
Wow. So did it almost feel like you didn't really, not that you didn't have a choice, but it was sort of.
Yeah.
It was just like for you.
we need to get your baby out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sort of thing. And my next memory is being on the hospital bed, being wheeled out of the OR and starting like coming to.
Wow.
And so totally not the delivery experience that was that myself or my husband were expecting. Because I was being put under general anesthesia, he couldn't be in the operating room at all. And so the team of doctors got Penelope out of me, did all of the initial tests, got her weighed, and then brought her out. My husband was sitting in a chair outside of the operating room waiting. And so they brought her to him, and I was still asleep at that point. They were probably stitching me up and all of that. And then, so he got to meet her first then. And then because of the infection risk and my fever during labor, she was born with a low-grade fever. And so they actually brought her immediately after up to the special care nursery.
Mm-hmm.
So then she could have an IV be put in herself with some antibiotics.
Poor little baby.
I know. Her first day was like real rough. I was probably a couple hours after she was born where I was like wheeled out of the OR, like into the recovery room, like not really knowing what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And then finally getting to go up to where the special care nursery is to actually meet my child. And so it was an experience that I definitely was not anticipating mm-hmm. or planned for. I'm incredibly thankful that she is healthy. And mm-hmm. after that round of antibiotics, she was in that special care nursery for a couple of days. And then we were able to, you know, bring her home and have her be discharged from there. But it was really hard thinking about that delivery experience and how it so wasn't what was envisioned.
No.
Or what was anticipated. And I think for me, it does make me disappointed is probably the best word. Like, it's not really like sadness, mm-hmm. but I think like, disappointed thinking that her first moments in this world were with me pass out cold on an operating table. And then my husband waiting outside of the room. And that neither of us were like physically or mentally there.
Yeah.
And I think that is, I think from a probably like a mental health standpoint when thinking about this experience, that's something that takes some grappling to come to terms with, and not really be as disappointed. You know, I think it's almost like growing up, like you think that, you know, when you get married, like your wedding's going to look a certain way. And when you have family, your family's going to look a certain way. And when you mm-hmm. have a baby, that experience is going to be a certain way. And I mean, we all know now as like adults that nothing ever goes fully according to plan,
mm-hmm.
but I think it is, you know, disappointing when it goes so awry.
It's okay for you to feel disappointed, girl. And listen, I would file that under trauma. You had a traumatic birth experience.
Yeah.
And it is
yeah.
totally okay for you to call it traumatic and that you do need to do a lot of healing. Meredith, just from this experience of interviewing so many mothers experience birth trauma in situations I don't want to say less traumatic, but not having the child put on their chest right away and having their child taken away for tests for a couple hours, like that in itself feels traumatic to a mother. So I think trauma is experienced in so many different levels, but I think what you experienced was definitely intense. I hope
intense is a good way to put it, I would say.
Yes. Yeah. So take all the time you need to process that. And if, okay, so now I'm curious to know, how are you doing, Mama? How is your mental health? Are you, like, where are you?
Yeah, I will say I feel incredibly lucky to be receiving, like, prenatal, postpartum, like, my general OB care at a practice that definitely puts the mental health and mental well-being of women and mothers as one of their core focus points.
Wow, that's amazing.
They actually have a social worker on staff that, you know, I've talked with her regularly throughout my pregnancy, since I'm just an anxious person in general. And sort of throughout pregnancy, I had all of these hiccups happening. And so for me, being at a practice that has resources like that, and that takes things like postpartum anxiety, anxiety as a whole, postpartum depression, and birth trauma, mm-hmm. You know, really seriously, I feel incredibly lucky to be at a practice and with doctors that recognize that. And even, you know, for me, having weekly appointments where it's just in person or virtual to like make sure my blood pressure mm-hmm. is still on track and adjusting my meds. I just had an appointment this morning and my OB, you know, one of his first questions, it was like, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Oh, you know, so how like, mentally, like how is your anxiety? Like how are you dealing with everything that happened? How is the baby? How are you doing with the baby?
That's amazing.
So, yeah. And so for me, having a team of doctors that really focus in on that has obviously been incredibly helpful and I think really monumental in helping me process everything. And the work with the social worker who really, I mean, her entire job is working with moms and new moms. And so having that resource to talk through all of this experience with has been really huge. And it's allowed me to really process, you know, all of this and continue to process all of this and to, you know, affirm and reaffirm that it's okay that this is going to take time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when part of me looks at it where it's like, do I want to do this again, ever again? Like, I don't know. And to hear that voice though, that's like, you at that point, you know, she was like to me, you are 2 weeks postpartum. Of course you don't know if you want to go through this again. And that is okay to not know. And for me, hearing that was so helpful. And hearing and knowing that sort of all of the feelings that I'm feeling and emotions that I'm working through, that it's all part of the process.
Totally.
So it definitely makes me feel not alone. And I feel incredibly thankful, you know, that this team of doctors really focus in on that. And I think, you know, I know that there are practices that don't have that same focus. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's so much to the detriment of moms and babies.
Absolutely.
You know, when it's a focus, you know, postpartum for women.
Yeah, totally. And it's totally okay if you don't know right now if you want to do this again, and your feelings might change, and then they might change again. and then they might change again.
Yeah.
It's you know, and I even talked about in my like a last solo episode about how we are not ready for baby number two. And my husband, he's an only child and he's totally okay. He doesn't have a sibling, doesn't know what it's like to have a sibling. He's totally okay if we just have one. So it's interesting like how different experiences just relate into that. But I love to hear that you have a team, because that was my first question. My second question is, how are you adjusting to newborn life? So despite all the health issues, how has it been with Penelope and how are you and Matt adjusting?
We are adjusting as well as we can. I will say the sleep deprivation piece is so real, and getting used to having sleep that's just broken up and choppy.
I know.
It is something that is so unnatural for an adult. And to go from, I mean, I myself, especially when pregnant, but I can't even say it in the past tense, because like I love sleep. Like when I was pregnant and I was really tired, I would go upstairs, crawl into bed at 8:30 at night. I'd scroll on Instagram for a little bit and then I would just pass out and I would sleep until like 7:30 the next morning.
Oh, so good. Like, I have no idea what that's like.
And now at most, and I will say Penelope is, I think in the grand scheme of newborns, she's a solid sleeper where she gives us at least like 2 to 3 hour chunks of time.
Oh, that's good.
It's not like every hour she's up or every other hour. Like she will give us like from 1 to 4.
Wow, that's amazing.
5 to 7. But going from I love getting almost 12 hours of sleep to 3 hours at a time, great, is definitely startling and a bit of a rude awakening.
LOL, startling. I like that word. Yeah.
And so we are adjusting. I think the sleep piece is a huge piece. Matt and I are definitely a team in this, and it's brought out
that's amazing
a huge amount of teamwork where, you know, even in with those like middle of the night feeds when she's up at 3 or 4, he is a lighter sleeper than I am, and so he tends to wake up first and we'll do the changing, we'll, you know, prep the bottle. We're doing mostly exclusive pumping right now, so I have like a bottle of breast milk ready.
Oh, good for you, girl. You're pumping and you, yeah. Wow. Good.
Yeah.
Claps. Very good. It's so challenging.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, but she definitely did not want to latch onto the boob that well. And going back into the hospital, I think threw a wrench into getting her to latch really well. So we're forging ahead with pumping for now. And for now it's working. But yeah, he'll change her diaper, get her fed. At that point, I'll stir her awake. I will get that pumping session done. And so we're kind of splitting it up with the nighttime stuff, which is working, at least for now. It's working well, but it definitely is, we miss our sleep. We definitely miss our sleep, but
there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I promise.
I cannot wait until our pediatrician mentions, you know, she's gaining weight quickly, like really well. And so he's like, oh, if she gives you like 5 hour stretches, like just like, you know, let her do that. She's gaining weight, she's being fed enough. And we're like, oh my gosh, she might give us like 5 hour stretches. That sounds magical. Like when will that happen? Because we can't wait.
I think 3-month-old Archie slept better than even 9-month-old Archie. So
wild.
Yeah, I know. I remember being in the thick of it where you are and asking other moms like, when is this when? And I remember everyone saying, hang on, there's a light. They will sleep more. Just wait. And I remember I used to hang on to those words like they were my Bible. Like, I was like, oh, no, it will happen one day. Yeah.
But we're adjusting, and it's a whole different life, though.
Yeah.
Than how life was 3.5 weeks ago.
Crazy, versus right? Now. It's your, yeah. You're now a family of three.
Yeah. We're a family of three. We have a whole human being that is eating, breathing, living, crying, needing us. And it just really reprioritizes everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably, aside from the sleep, that's the whole other adjustment that happens, where all of a sudden, I think everything that was probably so important 3.5 weeks ago, everything shifts. Like, yeah. Everything changes, where now it's like, she is our central focus.
Yeah. She's literally number one. Yeah, that's what it feels like for us too. And I'm curious to hear, because we were chatting before this about being career, you know, very career focused in our early to mid to late 20s, right? I forgot. I'm like, I'm 30. I was like, wait, where am I going? Yeah. Like, well, I'm 32. Exactly. So we're in our we're in our early to mid 30s, and our careers have defined us. We're both go-getters, like, right, type A. I don't want to use competitive in a bad word, but just like, we were willing to put in the work.
We're driven.
Yes.
And we work hard.
Yeah.
And for me, so much of who I am has been so tied to work.
Yeah.
And being successful at work and doing well at work and really focusing and putting my energy in on that. And I, for me at least, as a first time new mom, when I was pregnant, it was like, oh, I mean, like, yeah, I'm going to go on maternity leave, but I'm sure I'll still check in and I'll still have time and energy to kind of like touch base and like, sure, I can juggle all of it. And now it's like, oh yes, with my like 3 hours of sleep at a time and a newborn and figuring out, you know, pumping and feeding her and getting her into some sort of routine. Like, no, it definitely priorities just shift.
Yeah. And this was my biggest misconception. When I was pregnant, I was like, oh, I'm going to get so much done when I'm on maternity leave because all they do is sleep. Everyone tells me all they do is sleep. Okay, I'm going to blog. I'm going to do this. Maybe I'll take some photography class. Like, I had all these like grand, like, I thought I was going to get so ahead. Girl, I watched Selling Sunset and every single reality show on the planet when I was on maternity leave. But that's all my brain could handle. That's all I could do.
Because I think even when you look online, it's like, what does a newborn do? And like, you know, on like the What to Expect site, and it's like a chart of like what they do and how much time they sleep for. It's like, oh, they sleep for like 16 to 17 hours, like a day. Like, that's so much time. Yeah, I'm going to have so much time. And it's just not, it's just, maybe it equals out to be 16 hours.
Yeah.
But definitely does not feel like that.
Yeah.
It's that cycle of diaper, feeding, little bit of cuddle time, which is like the best part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting her down for like whatever nap. And then at that point, when she's sleeping, I turn the pump on and then I pump.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my God, the pumping.
And then I wash the pump parts.
Yep.
And maybe I get through a bit of an episode of a trashy reality TV show.
Yes.
My DVR is in a great spot right now. Like, it could be like 80% full. Like, I'm down to like 30% right now, which is great. and then she wakes up and then it repeats.
Yep.
And that's sort of every day on a loop. And that definitely is time and energy consuming.
Yeah. It just feels endless. So I'm curious, are there any things that people have been saying or said to you that have annoyed you as a new mom? Like, is there anything that whenever someone says it, you're just like,
I will say no one has said anything directly to me during, we're still early in though. Like, we are like 3 weeks in. So there is plenty of time for something annoying to be said directly to me. But I think, I think thinking about the labor and delivery experience that I had, I think thinking about how, you know, we were just saying maternity leave and the time and energy consuming life with a newborn, how that is. I think there's definitely a sentiment, an idea that's out there within the corporate world that maternity leave is somehow like a vacation.
Oh, God. I will.
Yeah. And I think that until as a new mom or as a new parent, you have this newborn that you're trying to figure out how to keep alive. And I say this as I look up at like plant in my home office that is like dead. Like that, like I failed at keeping alive. You know, I think it's the reality of how time and energy consuming parental leave and maternity leave is. It just is something that I definitely personally didn't understand.
No, it's not a vacation. It's right. Not like cute time off. It is.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And then I think the other thing that I've definitely, and social media definitely doesn't help, you know, with some of these annoying ideals that are out there. But there's definitely, you know, the subset of the population that feels as though a C-section is the easy way out of delivering.
I know. Who that, like, that's...
Like, I don't even know where that came from.
Where that came from.
Right?
Maybe someone who's never had a C-section before.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it's like every time I'm, like, going to get out of bed and I'm still like, ooh, like... I feel that, like, oh, sort of. No.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely something that's super annoying. And then I think there's a lot of unrealistic, and I think this all ties into it. There's a lot of unrealistic expectations for moms, and that really set up moms to not be able to live up to those expectations. And so thinking about like breastfeeding versus bottle feeding versus formula versus pumping, and everyone having sort of like their own stance on what's best.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, the whole breast is best, fed is best. Like, there's so much debate out there too. I'm sure you've seen it. We always, listen, I did both. I breastfed, I bottle fed, I pumped. We gave formula. We did everything because that's just what our family... I think it's just very personal to what your family... What's best for your family. And I think there's a lot of, like, glamorizing. Not that we should scare new moms or pregnant moms, right? That I also don't like. I don't like scaring because a lot of people scared me when I was pregnant. They'd be like, oh, just you wait. Like, that doesn't help either. But I think neither does glamorizing birth or just like the images that were served up don't help women who have experiences like yours, because you somehow feel, even though this situation was completely out of your control, you still feel like you could have done something differently to change the outcome. So I think that's a theme I'm really seeing is, I think a lot of women get really disappointed because they go in thinking they're going to get those picture perfect social media images of the baby on the chest and my hair is still in a blowout. My doctor told me that some ladies get blowouts, they get their makeup done, they get their eyelash extensions. Not kidding. I'm not joking. Maybe it's just, maybe it's a New Jersey thing, but
I cannot imagine. I mean, I think about probably how, thank God I didn't have a mirror in front of me when I was having those contractions and just begging my husband for like to pass me the ice chip. Oh. Like I'm sure like the vision that I looked had to have been so far from blowout and make.
Yeah. I looked like trash. Like not that I looked like trash, but I didn't look like those social media pictures. Like when he first came out, yeah. I mean, I looked like I was working hard.
I think that the glamorizing it, the expectation,
yeah,
that the buildup and that expectation. I mean, I think what's the worst of it? What's the worst consequence of it? Is that it really sets moms up to fail in some way,
mm-hmm.
or like have them feel like they're failing in some way, which pregnancy, labor and delivery, postpartum, hard enough. Yeah. Without that, you know, that expectation and that fear of failure,
yeah,
you know, on top of it, that, you know, thinking that it's just another for mom to live up to.
Oh gosh, right. Women to look up to. It's exactly. Like if you give birth and you're super skinny, it's, or if you're like, there's, we can't win. It feels like sometimes like, oh, that person's vain if they think about, you know, their body. Like it's just, there's no, it's like, we can't win. And I think I would just love to normalize that as new moms, like I would love to normalize piles of laundry, a messy house, dishes being piled up. Like it's because that's really what motherhood looks like, and that's okay. I feel like, so did you know in the Mormon community, like the biggest earners, the mom influencers, are all in Utah, and they're all in the Mormon community.
That's wild.
And you want to know why? Because they come from generations of homemakers. So in a sense, the women, they were raised generation to generation to be creative and to do crafts with their kids and keep a home and cook and clean. And that's where, I guess, in a way, we've almost demonized that life, but their creativity was able to be channeled into photography, into doing creative things. Like they really did thrive, and they thrived in their roles, and they are profiting hugely. It's just so interesting. I have to send you this episode. You have to listen.
I definitely want to hear it.
But because I agree.
But
the women that, like us, look at these accounts and we see these women who, you know, they're stay-at-home moms. They've been raised to do this. They've been trained to do this, to raise 8 children. They have been nurtured since infancy to do this. We were, for the last 12 years, we were in Excel pulling spreadsheets. Like
running reports. Like,
yeah.
Analyzing Looker reports and whatever. Like, that's
Doing that. Like, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh crap, I have to like manage the house and take care of a baby and like do my job. It's like this came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. That's so interesting because I totally agree. The mom influencer industry,
it's a thing. Like,
it's a thing. And the expectations that alone puts on women and on moms, it's wild.
Yeah, it's wild.
Wild.
Okay, yeah. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time because we're almost close to the hour, but I want to hear what has been really helpful for you. Have you had, you know, I have friends and family. Well, I know with COVID, it's complicated, but what has been helpful for you in this newborn stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think even in the COVID time that we're in, you know, the support system of my bubble of friends and family have been key. And so while, while the network is, I think, smaller and tighter during COVID mm-hmm. than it otherwise would be. I mean, for me, one of my close friends, that first like weekend that we were home, you know, she just came over and was like, I've made you 2 huge meals and I picked you up groceries. And I'm the type of person that even if someone is like, let me know what I can do to help. I'm happy to help. Like, I'm...
You're like, I'm good.
Right. I'm going to say I'm good, fine. I'm going to sooner order a same day delivery from Target to be delivered instead of asking someone to do it. That's just how I am. I know that's how you are too. And so for me though, that meant so much for her to just like, she not even let me say no. Like, she was just like, I've made this, I'm bringing it over. Like,
so nice. You.
And she's like, I'm putting it in your fridge, saying hi from a distance, and skadoodling, you know, since we're still in COVID. You know, my circle of best friends, like, even just like the daily group text messages and the
so
group
good.
Chat and just the check-ins and making sure that I'm doing okay. And how am I doing? How am I feeling? How's Penelope? You know, how sleep deprived are you? Are you feeling okay? Like, just like that kind of like check-in is really meaningful. And then Matt and I are lucky with family being close by. And so my mom lives a mile away from
that's so nice. House. Oh my God. She is ecstatic with Penny.
Yeah.
Penelope. Sorry, I keep wanting to call her Penny.
Poppy is her nickname.
Poppy. Yeah. I love it.
But yeah, my mom is thrilled, and she's super close by, so she is a huge resource and support for me. And then Matt's mom lives in Connecticut, and so she came up a couple weekends ago. She's coming up this weekend, and it's just so helpful to have that other set of hands.
Oh,
and
yes.
now that they're also at the age in this COVID time where they are fully vaccinated. And so
that's
we're at
so
that.
Good.
Yeah.
Peace
and
of
so
mind, right, Meredith?
Yeah. And they're able to come and visit and spend time with us and with their granddaughter with a bit less worry than pre-vaccine. So that feels really good too, that the timing worked out nicely for them to be able to be that in-person resource for us.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Oh, I'm so happy to hear that you have a village, right?
Even
in these strange times.
Yeah, it's so cliche, but it takes that village and it takes that tight-knit, that community and those resources, you know, to lean on and to really get through sort of like this newborn stage where every day feels and looks different.
Yeah, right. Every day's the same but different. It's so, it's such a unique time. Okay, I thank you so much for taking this hour to talk to me. I'm so happy you shared your story, and I definitely want to invite you back in a few months when you're out of the newborn stage to see how you're doing. And then especially for you to also reflect on it too, because right now you're in the thick of it. And I know for me, I look at the newborn stage so differently than I did when I was in it. So it's just it's so interesting. Do you keep a journal? Something I wish I did was I keep a journal.
I've been wanting to start to more so. I used to when I was younger.
Me too.
And I think now, especially when sort of like real time, like all of this stuff happening.
So much.
And being a new parent, I think putting pen to paper would be a really great thing. And a great thing, I think, for her later on too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. How cool would it be to have like, it would be so cool. Something I've been doing is 5 minutes a day. I just set the timer on my iPhone and I'm like, okay, 5 minutes, I'm just going to write. Because I'm not a meditator. I can't meditate. I wish I could.
Yeah,
so many people are like, meditation's changed my life. I'm like, I can't do it. I'm sorry.
The silence. I'm too much in my own head.
I know. I think that's the point, is for us to not be in our own heads. But yeah. So
I love 5 minutes to write. Like, I love that.
It's non-intimidating, right? 5 minutes.
Yeah. Anyone can see like 5 minutes. And I think that's actually like enough time to get the important thoughts and feelings out for the day.
Yeah.
Where then it's sort of like the brain dump and it's not so much like overthinking it.
Yeah. Some days I write like a Neanderthal. I'm like, today, good. Yesterday, bad. And I'll like literally just write like adjectives like sad, happy, like okay, breakfast was delicious. Like I'll just write stupid stuff, but it's like it is helpful. But anyway, Meredith. Okay. Thank you, Meredith, for being here today. If someone wanted to connect with you, where could they find you?
Well, you can find me on Instagram. My handle is at Mare Malloy, MereMolloy, or the good old Facebook.
The good old Malloy. Oh yeah, TBT Facebook.
I know. TBT. Oh, you know? The social media platform that we all use all the time and now don't use as much.
I know.
But definitely people can slide into my DMs.
Slide into the DMs. Well, thank you, Meredith, so much for being here today. Everyone, thank you for listening and stay tuned for Meredith, hopefully to be back in a couple months to share an update of how she's doing. And stay tuned for next week for the next episode.
For joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. Have a friend that would like this podcast? Share the love. Stay in touch. Definitely give us a follow on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast. I'd also love to continue the conversation with you on my personal account, so let's be friends. Slide into my DMs at Lena Forrestal. Finally, be sure to check out my blog at lenaforrestal.com for all things motherhood, homesteading, and recipes that both you and baby will love. Thanks again, and stay tuned for next week's episode.